the original Venusians would lie out on the golden sands when coming out of the sea, to sleep during the twilight hours. Through eons they lived in the seas and on islands of breathtaking beauty, getting their nourishment from the plants of the seas and the land. Radiation from the star was filtered through a dense atmosphere during daylight when our ancestors spent their time in the sea. Thus there was no pigment in the skin, which has remained white and delicate, as it is with us, to this epoch in time. We have a natural longing for the sea, handed down to us through the ages. We care for our white skin against the damaging radiation of stars. Evolving through a peaceful existence in harmony with nature, our science and technology expanded. We explored the higher atmosphere, anxious to discover what lay beyond the high clouds of cosmic dust. Our scientists perfected skyships filled with helium to float beyond the limits of the atmosphere, where we discovered other worlds shining with the reflected light of the sun. We then wished to explore these other worlds, and perfected spaceships to cross the far reaches of space. We reached our neighbor world, a binary system, which seemed most interesting, with a larger planet harboring life. After landing on Earth, which we showed you in the first reflection in time, we continued into space and landed on Mars, thereby encompassing the three inner planets of the solar system where the temperature range from the star permits the existence of active life as we know it. These three planets flourished in peace and harmony through eons of time. But ever alert to protecting their heritage in a violent universe, the scientists of this utopia detected a flaw in the rhythm of the sun. As it aged, it became a variable star and expanded with lethal radiation in cycles of time in its path of evolution. The cycle recurs more frequently as the star ages and loses the pressure balance within. Our scientists traveled outward in their starships, away from the mother system, to seek a new and waxing star system to harbor the peoples of their civilization and perpetuate their race. Vast spaceships were constructed to travel the fathomless reaches of interstellar space and carry the millions of people away from the sun's system. Our scientists found a neighboring system and they landed there, setting up their headquarters on four young planets capable of harboring life as we know it. In time, our civilization improved conditions on the remaining three planets of the system, and now we occupy the entire solar system known as Alpha Centauri. The spaceships we used to take our civilization to Alpha Centauri are known as mother ships. They are vintage ships, but are still in use at this time. We carried the horses, cattle and other gentle types of animals in these spaceships to their new homes in Alpha Centauri, as well as many species of birds. The scientists left a remnant of their people on Earth to father a new race of humankind adapted to a flaring star. They maintained lands in the far northern hemisphere of the planet, as natural upheavals through the aeons changed the face of the lands and the seas in the equatorial and southern regions. The descendants of these people are now so interbred and sorely affected by continuous cycles of climatic and environmental changes and extremes of weather that they are almost unrecognizable. Except for some of them here and there, they no longer bear any resemblance to the tall, golden-skinned race of humankind, with aquiline features and almond eyes, who were our forebears from Venus and who were far removed from the present savagery of the human mind in the intensity and depravity of the present time on Earth. Violence and annihilation will be the outcome for people of Earth, unless they change their attitude of mind. They need to become enlightened to the truths of the universe in which they live, and follow their forebears into space to find the escape route to the stars and their destiny. A harsh and precarious existence is endured by the inhabitants of Earth, where rigid social laws have to be maintained. Many would otherwise be trampled beneath the rushing feet of their avid companions on a world where politics and a primitive system still exist. Aha, I thought as Akan began to speak. Now is the time for straight talking and the truth. According to Earth scientists, stellar distances are expressed in parsecs, 1 parsec being the distance at which the angle of parallax is 1 second of arcade, 30 billion kilometers or 3.26 light years. The parallax of the nearest star to Earth, Proxima Centauri, is 0.76, corresponding to a distance of 1.31 parsecs or 4.3 light years. To use the light year, since light traveling at 3 million kilometers a second covers some 10 billion kilometers in a year, this means that the distance between Earth and Proxima Centauri is about 42 billion kilometers. Theia mentioned before, when we were in the mothership, that these stars, a triplet system, are of type G or K, similar to the Sun. This star system known as Alpha Centauri is 39 billion kilometers or 4 light years from Earth. Therefore, this star system is closer to Earth than astronomers have calculated. With your present instruments, stellar distance determination is difficult even in the case of the nearest stars. Astronomers classify a star by its spectral lines, from which its intrinsic luminosity can be inferred, and hence its distance estimated from its apparent brightness in the sky. Twinkling stars seem to be related to star-like objects and not to extragalactic nebulae. Astronomers thought that these objects might actually be stars. A radio source lies in the direction of the constellation Centaurus, emanating from a distant galaxy of unusual mass and brightness. This galaxy possesses a nucleus equivalent to 100 million suns, concentrated in a volume of space smaller than that occupied by your solar system. The twinkling radio source is coming from this galaxy out in intergalactic space. Earth scientists still cannot grasp the concept of cosmic knowledge and understanding. One's mind needs to encompass the entire universe to realize and know what it is all about. Instruments are still limited and affected by the Sun's corona. It was mentioned earlier, when we were in the mothership, that the Sun's tenuous corona extends so far from the visible disk that Earth and Mars are enveloped in it. This simply means that Earth and its atmospheric sheath are not moving in a perfect vacuum at all. The tenuous corona, the outer atmosphere of the Sun known as the ecosphere, is at a temperature suitable for the existence of advanced life. In other words, three planets, Venus, Earth and Mars, are within the temperature range of the Sun, which permits the existence of active life as we know it. We can see the corona encircling the Sun like a halo, the pulsing streamers of the Sun's atmosphere. Further out it becomes more tenuous and invisible. That is the Sun's outer atmosphere, or ecosphere. The corona is best observed from Earth during a total eclipse. The Sun's corona is a dense concentration of the particles that radiate to the outer regions of the solar system. The exosphere is the outer atmosphere of a planet. We observe all this data through the lens of our cosmic understanding. It must all be observed as a whole. It is no good observing and understanding your environment and the galaxy by what goes on in the bottom of your garden. We do not feel the effect of cosmic storms at the bottom of our garden, because we live at the bottom of an ocean of air that provides a stout shield against the rays that bombard our planet. Solar flares burst from the surface of the Sun. These flares are responsible for the solar storms that bombard the Earth with abnormal amounts of radiation. This also occurs with the stars in this system, but owing to the distance between our star, Proxima Centauri, and the binary system of Alpha Centauri, we call the entire star system a triplet system. We are not unduly affected by solar storms. The average separation between the stars in a spiral arm is 8 light years. Our science and our knowledge of these distances, of course, are quite different, because our civilization and achievements are far in advance of anything known on Earth. I am outlining these simple explanations in Earth terms so that when you write this down, my beloved, the average people on Earth will have an understanding of their environment within the cosmos. Their minds are, as a rule, restricted to their backyards. Do you think it would help to give them more information? I asked. Definitely not, Akin sternly replied. They would only use it for political and military purposes. So you see, he continued, this star that is nearest your Sun lies at a distance of more than 4 light years, which is roughly equal to 39 billion kilometers according to Earth astronomers, as their calculations vary. Alpha Centauri is a binary system and Proxima, at 4.2 light years, is a far-out member of the Alpha Centauri group. They calculate Alpha Centauri as being at a distance of 4.3 light years. All this makes Venus and Mars very close by to Earth people, and Earth lies near the center of the Sun's ecosphere region, which gives it an advantage over Venus and Mars. There is thunderstorm activity in the atmosphere of Venus, as the upper atmospheric layers are cold, while those near the surface are very hot. We are now improving these conditions, cooling the atmosphere to surface level in order to allow these thunderstorms to produce precipitation. This, in turn, will bring moisture and the cooling of the land, and then flooding to create lakes and seas. Mars still has active volcanoes, which are the breath of life. Its riverbeds will run once more with the waters of life, when we take over these planets again. We will do so to prevent the wanton destruction that would be their lot if humankind from Earth were to take over. Oh, I said softly. I am so glad. There is much more to tell you, Akin said, but that must wait now. I had no idea of the time as we keep it on Earth, but I sensed the time going so very fast, and I dared not think of the future. I just lived for the glory of the moving present. The fantastic scene shimmered away into nothing. I was stunned and overwhelmed by the magnitude of it all, and above all, by these wonderful people who had overcome their fear of the unknown and moved out into the vast reaches beyond their home system. They ventured out beyond their known ken to explore and prepare for future generations and bring the magic lease of life back to Venus and Mars. The orange disk of Proxima Centauri lowered in the sky toward the mountains with the slow rotation of Meton. The trees cast long shadows over the emerald sward and the vast expanse of sea darkened in its blueness, but night did not come. The magnificent twin stars of Alpha Centauri rose over the sea, and the atmosphere filled with a golden light and the swelling chorus of many birds. The fresh tang of the sea filled the room as Playa told me, "We do not have books, but instead we keep our history in visual sound libraries, such as these magnetic rolls. When the rolls are electrified, they show the scene that you saw portrayed across the room. These rolls go back in time to when our scientists perfected such means of reflections in time, like photographing images in the atmosphere, such as thought forms and planetary scenes of the past, present and future. We can hear the hissing breath of a planet vibrating in the sound waves of time, fanning out beyond the light barrier, sounding on the harmonic chords of the heart rhythm of the parent race, and we go to gather it back into the fold. And that is what you are now doing to Venus and Mars, I reflected. How wonderful to have this awareness of a planet's life, to be aware that a planet is a living entity that is entitled to care and consideration like anything else. And you, my dear, were ready to come out into the depths of personal experience, and you have therefore attained this privilege of being witness to other worlds beyond your own. We have affinity of mind and are closer than sisters. Playa put her arm around me, lifting me out of the soft couch. Come, she said. I will take you to your bed. You must rest now. We went up the gently sloping stairs to the first floor and into a room that opened off the circular balcony. Half of the circular wall of the room was open to the fresh air, and a low oval divan lay in the center of the room, covered with rose-red silk. A toilet room opened in the wall with a large sunken bath, long mirrors and exotic plants growing around the glowing walls. The sunken bath, made of mother of pearl, was in the middle of the room. Playa slipped my silken gown off and gently but very firmly laid me down on the divan, then proceeded to massage my back with long, firm strokes. I stretched out on the firm comfort of the divan and felt every muscle in my body relax. Akin bent over me and kissed my forehead. I knew the time of birth was at hand, and I relaxed in mind and body as Akin calmly organized the birth of his son with endearing words and the massage of his healing hands. I felt the power of his hands on my body as he gently massaged my tummy and my thighs, encouraging my confidence, erasing all tension and creating an atmosphere of joy and contentment with his loving care and attention. Gently, turning me onto my side again, he massaged my back. No pangs of contraction coursed through my thighs. There was a silence so deep as I felt Akin's hands turn me onto my back again. He tenderly stroked my hair back and told me to go to sleep. Wondering in my half-asleep state where I had heard him say this before, my mind was illuminated suddenly with the vision and knowledge of our perfect unity, and I knew we had always been together through the pastures of time. "Push down gently," Akin said. "Take a deep breath, and push again." There was no tension, no pain, no sense of labor or strain as Akin placed my feet flat on the divan, bending my knees up and holding them wide apart. I had a sense of comfort and well-being, as if I were floating on a cushion of air, yet I was aware that I was fully dilated and ready to give birth to our son. Then suddenly, with no effort at all, just a deep feeling of achievement and pleasure, he was born gently and smoothly, coming away with the placenta. Akin extricated him from it and Playa dried him in the scented air that was moist with the fragrance of the sea. "A beautiful son for you both," Playa said, placing him in my arms to suckle. "He is perfectly formed, with your golden hair and eyes. Born naturally and easily, his debut into the outside world is completely without shock to his system. His smooth, golden skin was without wrinkles, and as I gathered his warm, naked body to my breast, Akin put his arms about us both. My beloved brought me back to the universe and the knowledge of who I am through the golden glory of love's light, and the fathomless seas of space revealed the truth of life where love and creation is the secret. We all rejoiced in the happiness of our unity. Many friends and relatives came from far and wide to see Akin's son. He is unusual and very special, they said. He will become a great scientist. On Earth the rhythm of my heart would never be the same again after living on Meton. My son's growing period was full of wonder for me. He gently suckled the milk of life from me, and as his beautiful white teeth formed, he turned to the natural diet we all shared. At no time did Akin and I leave him alone. He shared the music with us. He came with us on Akin's back for walks and he came with us when we rode the white horses to the mountains or bathed in the sea. The pure air and healthy climate, along with the delicious foods and water full of vitamins and trace elements, soon restored my health. Akin made us have long periods of sleep, stretched out on the comfortable divan, and my son would snuggle into my arms. He never fretted and cried as Earth babies do. He was happy and contented, but always full of life and intelligence, taking note of everything around him. Nothing escaped his discerning golden eyes and his rapidly forming intellect as he grew into a beautiful child, gentle and considerate. He slept long hours on his own divan in the room where he was born, the beautiful room open to the sky, while Akin and I spent our time together tending the gardens, the horses and the birds, playing lovely music on stringed instruments or lying together on the big divan for hours of peaceful slumber and love. I played an instrument with a keyboard and found that I could create the most lovely music by just playing the notes in the same fashion as a piano keyboard. The white keys were made of pearl with a pink cluster and the black keys of deep red garnets that looked black without light underneath. It was a lovely little musical instrument like a celesta, hand-carved from the golden wood of the mountain trees, which gave it a harmonious soundboard. I loved it very much and wished I could always have one. "Perhaps you will, my beloved," Akin would gently say. The days were serene and glorious. Sometimes great cumulus clouds would build up, bringing rain across the land and the seas, and Akin would take us away in his planetary craft, a small replica of his scientific spaceship, to other parts of the planet and show us the beauty of the islands and vast seas. We would hover over glistening polar caps and then land on islands covered in green parklands where homes in low circular buildings gleamed in the golden daylight. We often landed on the top of one of the homes to visit friends and spend some time with them, sometimes for days. I had no idea of the time as we keep it on Earth, but I sensed the time going so very fast, and I dared not think of the future. I just lived for the glory of the moving present. "I have attuned your heart to the higher vibratory rate emanating from the radiations of light in this system," said Akin, answering my thoughts. It has stepped up to match the time continuum on Meton, which you are now sensing. There were no cities or skyscrapers as Earth people know them anywhere on Meton. Homes were scattered in park-like grounds amid flowering shrubs and beds of brilliant flowers. The smooth, green lawns needed no cutting or trimming, as the grass covered the ground like a springy moss. Here was an abundance of all things needed by civilization: food, water, all materials for building, an unlimited supply of energy on tap from the atmosphere and the universe. There were no shortages of any kind, and no monetary system at all. It was a perfectly organized way of life, with an abundance of all things. The inhabitants tended and cared for all aspects of life within this great and powerful civilization. There were no films of violence, horror and murder, and there were no drugs, drinking or smoking. There were no comics for children full of the horrors of life on Earth, a corrupt civilization with a past and present satiated with cruelty, slavery and a horrifying record of shooting and violence. All this type of thing, the way of life on Earth, was taboo on Meton. Nobody wanted to see it, it was unnecessary, something only for barbarians, loathsome and savage foes who howled at the gates of their neighbors. Akan's civilization had created a utopia and kept it entirely apart from contamination by other civilizations. A way of life, a way of thinking, an attitude of mind, a high level of existence, all these things had to be protected from destruction by others less evolved. There is the vital matter of hygiene that must not be vitiated by contact with less advanced peoples. How lovely it was to live among these wonderful people, to watch our son grow and start running about, to hear him call me mother. That was simply thrilling for me. There was always so much to do of great interest and excitement. It was such a pleasure to be able to create so much beauty to last through time. Sometimes Akan would take us to visit the other planets of the system. Through the eons, his people had turned them into fertile places with many lakes and seas, inhabited by people and gentle animals and with no overpopulation. Many beautiful birds, large and small, lived amongst the woods and forests, and the harmony and happiness of all the flora and fauna could be felt and sensed with delight. Back home on Meton, we settled to quiet relaxation in our lovely circular house. Our son needs a name, Akan said. A name that means something to you and something to me. Shall we call him Ailing? I suggested. His name must begin with an A like yours. And it means noble, a prince of the royal blood, for indeed, he already has that bearing and manner, together with gentleness and humility. My beloved, so be it, Akan replied. You have chosen well. The name sounds like our names. We shall now gather everyone here to name our son and to celebrate this wonderful occasion. Plio dear, where are you? Coming. Plio answered from the garden. She came inside, and they discussed plans for a celebration. Let's have it out in the garden, I suggested. It's so very beautiful. I need to preserve every precious moment of my life here. Only 4 months of Earth time, and it is going so quickly. But then, there are no years, months or weeks here for that matter. Time is not marked off in intervals, I said with wonder in my voice. Therefore we simply move in the stream of time, which makes us ageless. My beloved, Akan replied, you are ageless now, without the restriction of months and years. Because of the stream of time on this planet, it will seem like only 4 months to you when I return you to Earth. Time is of no consequence here on Meton. There is no night or day, nor the marking of intervals of time. In fact, the higher vibratory frequency of light you are now immersed in will restrict the aging process of your body, and you will be younger when you return to Earth. 4 months are only applicable to Earth time. The aging process in days, weeks, months and years does not apply in the higher range of frequencies, where the passage of time and the span of human life is so changed that the myth of Methuselah seems pale in comparison. Human beings, like the microatoms of light, can be stirred from their lethargy and attain eternal life through their electromagnetic nature. Through this they are able to renew themselves physically every 7 years with pure thoughts and love, by simply strengthening electromagnetic energy and by adhering to that which they are. Time is not a factor in our lives. We live in timelessness. Our stars are eternal and constant in their output of radiation and the spiral waveform of light, and time moves in harmonic frequency. The sun's system is not harmonically balanced because the star itself is a variable, and because Jupiter, with its retinue of planets and satellites, is another star that is variable in its output. As a forming sun, Jupiter emits the radiation of a star, and its closer planets benefit from this output. We describe the sun's system as a cluster system, Akin explained, a solar system within a solar system. All stars and planets within a system affect one another and in turn affect all flora and fauna upon each planet. Galaxies, similarly, exert magnetic influence on all solar systems. We use these wavelengths of light for navigation purposes. The celebration took place in Akin's home. Many luminaries of this great civilization came from as far afield as the constellations of Lyra and Cygnus. Solar systems with inhabited planets exist there, as the scientists among Akin's people have, over the eons, improved conditions there. They all loved Ailing, as his beauty as a young child was something quite remarkable. His high intelligence and perfection of manner impressed even these great people, and they wanted to take him away with them to the constellation of Cygnus. "This is a fantastic success with a woman of a planet like Earth," they said. "We would like Ailing to visit us in our part of the galaxy. He will become a great scientist and benefit our civilization." "Oh no, Cygnus is too far away," I told them. "It is at least 1,500 light-years from Earth to Deneb. Vigwin Lyro is much closer, only about 26 light-years from Earth. Please don't take him to Cygnus. There is going to be a supernova in that constellation." "My dear, there is no need to be upset," one of the scientists said. "We did not mean you to be. We will not take your son to Cygnus if you do not wish it. But we are very interested in your prediction of a supernova taking place in that area. We are aware of the star in question, and we believe your intuition and knowledge of the future is heightened with your son involved. Now that we know the truth, we must ask Akin to accompany us back to Vega to observe this very important occurrence. We have just sent a message to the home system in Cygnus to warn them to keep a watch on the star. This will mean the birth of another solar system." I looked at Akin, and his eyes reassured me and gave me courage as I took Ailing's hand and we quietly went upstairs together. The timing of my heartbeats had started to go out of rhythm when the scientists suggested taking Ailing away to Cygnus, and now Akin would be going to Lyra. He would take Ailing with him to educate him in the mysteries of the universe, and I would be taken back to Earth where I must impart all this knowledge to a struggling humanity and in so doing, be parted from my beloved ones. The herbal juices helped to regulate my heart, but the stress of attempting to maintain the vibratory rate of the time continuum on Meton caused its rhythm to become worse, and I had to remain indoors within a pressurized room suitable to the timing of my heart rhythm. Akin did not wish to implant a timing device, which would have regulated my heart to the electrical frequency of Meton for all time, because I had to return to Earth and my heart's rhythm was tuned to Earth's electrical field through the influence of the Sunday. But back on Earth, the rhythm of my heart would never be the same again after living on Meton. I would never regain my health either way, not by the implant of a timing device or even the implant of a living heart, because the metabolism of my whole being had been changed and subjected to a higher frequency in a different time dimension, from which it could never recover. The rhythm of the heartbeat varies in changed time field conditions as the body tries to maintain normal circulatory pressure within the atmosphere of alien planets, where light and gravitational pressure vary. Hearts are timepieces for the electrical vibratory rate of each individual within the environment of birth. How worthwhile it all was, though, I thought. How wonderful. I had really lived to the fullest as the divine essence of truth encompassed me. The golden glory of Achan's love and Ailing's love would remain with me forever, never, ever to change. The trees outside were enveloped in the hazy mist of their respiration as they released an abundance of oxygen into the atmosphere. How fresh and invigorating it was! All life responded and grew in abundance within these harmonious environs.